Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. Today, I have the original best ball degenerate, Chris Felicetta himself. You, of course, can follow him on Twitter, at Chris Felicetta. I'm your host, Flex Shane. Follow me at the Flex Network One. Chris, we had you on a few weeks ago. I want to say it was right before the draft.
Yeah, we did a bunch. We did a pre-draft contest. A lot has changed. A lot has changed. Quarterback ADP, I think, is the main thing that's changed. We were just talking about behind the scenes before we got started. The top three, there's been movement all across the quarterback board, but specifically the elite ones are kind of dropping a round or so. So I think that's kind of an interesting dynamic right now in the best ball streets.
We got to talk about the shift in the quarterback ADPs. We got to talk about Alexander Mattison, Dalvin Cook. Obviously, Dalvin Cook officially was released from the Vikings just yesterday. We're recording this on June 10th. We understand it's kind of the off season, so a lot of these shows are evergreen. You can use some of these strategies, but we got to pay for some bills here, Chris, real quick. So, of course, you can check out all of our content over at dfsarmy.com, dfsarmy.com. We have our rookie rankings up there. We have our best ball rankings up there, which, man, there's been so much of shifted even in the last 10 days since I put them up that I got to update those. So we'll get your opinions on some players and some takes on that. And then really what we want to focus on now for this show, Chris, is we want to talk about specifically best ball tournament strategy. Now, call me a coward for what it is. I typically will play in more so just the individual leagues and non-tournament type leagues over at Underdog. You, however, are, like I like to say, a little an aficionado.
Or degenerate, however nice you want to be.
Or degenerate. Listen, it's a talent. And you've done well in past years, and you're definitely a volume drafter. So some of the things we want to talk about, you and I both participated in a Poodle, which is kind of that mid-range tournament draft. So some of our plays there, as well as you were kind enough to show me some of your player shares. So I'm going to put you on the hot seat, talk about some of your higher-owned players. And defend them, and then just get into it. So let's not bury the lead here. One of the guys that I really want to talk about, because I feel like I might have a divisive opinion on this, but it's Alexander Mattison. So first and foremost, you know, I'm going to give you one of these, because you, even in this tournament here, you actually got an early share of Alexander Mattison. So for the people who are counting at home, he's going at a right around ADP of 68 right now. You got him at 79. And that ADP is creeping up, 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 up. So the general public believes right now that Alexander Mattison is going to be the guy. And I'm curious what your opinion is. Like, when it's all said and done and the dust is settled, do you think that Alexander Mattison is going to be the lead dog on that team? Or are they going to go and get a little bit more veteran help?
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they brought in somebody like a dusty vet, like a Lenny or a Kareem Hunt or somebody to maybe take some carries. But I think they want to give Alexander Mattison the first crack at it. He's performed well in spot duty when Dalvin's missed in the past. They gave him, I think, maybe the second biggest contract that a running back got this offseason behind Miles Sanders. So he got like pretty decent money. And he's shown versatility. He can do it in the pass game. He's a decent runner between the tackles. He's not going to, like, you know, be Derrick Henry, but he can get the job done. So I think they want to give him the first crack. And I think that he's probably going to settle, I would think, more in like a fifth round range, closer to like kind of the Miles Sanders type guys or maybe Aaron Jones. So I was definitely getting some shares with the anticipation that Cook was going to get cut. And I think a lot of people were. But I don't think I'm going to be overweight at him. Like, compared to, I'd still rather have an Aaron Jones. I think I'd rather have Miles Sanders, maybe Damian Pierce, if that's the range that he ultimately settles in. But I'm very happy to have a decent position on him now.
Yeah, I think that is kind of a sweet spot. So I'm looking here. He's going as RB21 right now. So right ahead of him is Damian Pierce. It's right in that, actually, the Dalvin Cook range. It's right after Joe Mixon and Miles Sanders, which I kind of like that range. I mean, personally, though, like, I don't see any difference between a player like Isaiah Pacheco, Cam Akers, Rashad White in that tier. So when I go up to my rankings, I think I'm going to put him more in that level of a tier where the team itself, I mean, if you take our fantasy football lens off for a second here, Chris, I feel like the Minnesota Vikings have no idea what the hell they're doing right now. Like, to go out, to get a young player like Alexander Mattison, but they're cutting all these veteran players because they're being cheap. And it just doesn't feel like they really want to contend this year when there's this guy, what's his name? Oh yeah. His name's Aaron Rodgers. He's now a Jersey boy. And that division's wide open. Right. It's crazy to me.
I think it's just because they're paying Kirk Cousins so much, they kind of have to do a bit of a, they're in a little bit of cap trouble. So it's just, this is kind of like a bit of a reset year, which is weird coming off the two seed. And like you said, in a wide open division, but I like them offensively. I think they're still, they were still productive. You know, obviously you're going to take Justin Jefferson number one. And this is like kind of one thing I wanted to talk to you about too, because a lot of people are like, kind of having that debate, whether it's Chase, Jefferson, McCaffrey. And I don't have a strong opinion like separating those three guys, but I'm taking Jefferson every time I get the number one pick, because if you don't, you're not going to have any. Like, and it's like, I don't want to be a full fade on Justin Jefferson. Like, you could, if you, let's say you had a strong stance that McCaffrey was your guy and you took every time in the first three picks, you took McCaffrey, then you're going to wind up with maybe like, if you get a few fourth or fifth pick shares, you're going to wind up with like 30% McCaffrey, and you're going to have a stance, but then you're going to be a full fade on Chase and Jefferson, which is a dangerous game. So I'm just leaving that in the hands of the market, and I'm taking my Justin Jefferson whenever I get the one pick. And then that kind of dictates what you do your whole draft. You kind of build a Minnesota stack, maybe run it back with some week 17 Green Bay Packers, who I think are a little undervalued. Like I'm not certain that Love is going to suck. And if he's, you know, at least functional, I think there are some guys on that offense that'll provide good value relative to where they're going.
Yeah, it's really tough to tell whether or not the Packers trying to move on from Aaron Rodgers was more of a fatigue thing or more of a belief in what Jordan Love can actually do and lead this team. And I mean, look, they're trying to surround him with talent. They're trying to set him up to succeed. And listen, like, I've had this rant before on the show where the reason that they weren't surrounding Aaron Rodgers with talent was because Aaron Rodgers was the talent. He was the kind of, he was the tide that rose all boats. Whereas Jordan Love isn't that guy. How do you succeed with these young, or he's not a rookie, but these younger quarterbacks, he's surrounded with a strong supporting cast. So to me, that makes a lot of sense. And I really like what you said there where, listen, Justin Jefferson, all things being equal, if you could choose your pick, maybe you wouldn't choose him one-on-one all the time. If you had, say, 50 or 100 chances at that one spot, you diversify it. But that's not how it works. It's randomized. So when you do get that one spot, you have to smash the button on Justin Jefferson, because if you're at the two, if you're at the three, you might get Christian McCaffrey. You might get Ja'Marr Chase. And then that way you can diversify your team, especially when you're doing volume drafting like what you do. But let's get into your team, shall we? Let's talk about it. So this was a poodle team that you drafted, and I quite like your team. We were texting what was going on, and it's funny. Both you and I were a little tepid about how our teams were going, but you know, sometimes you have to just trust the process, and I like how they turned out. But let's talk about your team first. So you ended up going with a build of two quarterbacks, five running backs, eight wide receivers, and three tight ends. And the reason you went with just two quarterbacks, I presume, is because you went early. You got Lamar Jackson right at the ADP at the time at pick 31. Then you got Aaron Rodgers coming back. At the running back position, you took the plunge on Bijan Robinson, baby. So you got Bijan Robinson, J.K. Dobbins, Alexander Mattison, and an absolute steal value now, Devon Achane and Chase Brown. And then at wide receiver, you got Jalen Waddle, who, man, he's going to be so solid every single year. Jerry Jeudy, Jordan Addison, Odell Beckham. So you got a stack there with Lamar, Jalen Hyatt, Donovan Peoples-Jones in Cleveland, Marvin Jones, Mecole Hardman for that Aaron Rodgers stack. And then at tight end, now this is, I think, one of the best values of the draft here. You got Darren Waller. His ADP at the time was 79. You got him a pick 90. That's an absolute steal, man. And then you came back with Tyler Conklin, another little Aaron Rodgers stack, and then followed by Trey McBride, who he's the number one tight end in Arizona, man. I get that Arizona is going to be a bit of a dumpster fire, but people are just out on Trey McBride.
I think there's a lot of targets that have been vacated with Hopkins gone. Like we've never really seen Hollywood Brown stay healthy for a full season. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like Rondell Moore is like a terrible track record of health. So I could see. And McBride has the draft pedigree. He came on late a little bit last year. Like, he's a guy that I love as like an 18th round pick. I specifically like him in Eagle stacks, like that week 17 run back. If I want a little piece of the of the Cardinals to run it back, I love tacking McBride onto that. But I just wanted to add some depth to my tight end room with that one there.
I think that's sharp. I think that's a great little pick there. And especially if you do wait, listen, like Darren Waller, you got him at pick 90. That I would consider that waiting on tight end. He's one of the last tiers. And with the camp narratives, I see his ADP slowly creeping up. But as of right now, that's a fantastic value. From a tournament perspective, Chris, first of all, how much do you value / I'm going to put in quotations here, force the stack with players?
I do try to force the stacks because especially like you're basically, I mean, I know we've talked about this before, but it's essentially four uncorrelated DFS tournaments that we're playing here. There's the 14-week tournament that leads to the playoffs. Then you got to beat generally 12 teams week 15 to advance, beat 12 teams week 16 to advance, and then week 17, depending on the size of the contest, you know, beat hundreds of teams in the final. So I think you got to have stacks there. Now, I will definitely use it as a tiebreaker, and I even use week 17 as a tiebreaker, but like I'm making the priority the guys I want. But like if I have like Daniel Jones, I think is really easy to backstack. Now, the beat writers have been all over Waller and camp, and I know everybody looks great in shorts and you know, running against no defense wearing shorts and Jude, but like the beat writers can't stop drooling over Waller. And we've seen Darren Waller be a top three or four tight end in the league. So like, if you can get him there, like that's normally kind of the range where I'll only take two, where it's debatable to take two or three tight ends. Like if I get a Kelsey or an Andrews or probably a Pitts or a Goddard, I'm almost certainly just taking two on underdog where it's only 18 roster spots. And I think they're so like valuable, but
yeah,
Waller and like Njoku now, like if I don't take a ton of Njoku or Freiermuth in that middle range, like if I miss out on like Waller, then I'm kind of punting off. Like I really like the rookies. I know that's kind of been bad historically drafting rookie tight ends in fantasy, but I think this class has a chance to be like an outlier and a little different, especially where a lot of the guys landed. But I'm often just punting off tight ends if anything past Waller for, and then just going with three of them.
Well, and to your point, I mean, it's so cheap to get these giant stacks. Looking here just at ADPs again. So Saquon Barkley is obviously going super early. He's going in early round two. But then the next Giants player off the board is Darren Waller at 81 ADP right now. This is as of this morning. And Daniel Jones, you get him at 111.
Yeah, I think he's...
Go ahead.
I think he's underrated based on what he did last year and based on the talent they've added around him. I mean, he rushed for over 700 yards, right? Like people, I think there's a lot of bias built in there where people just think Daniel Jones sucks, think he was overdrafted, but they don't look at the fact that this guy is a legitimate running quarterback. Like we don't, just because he doesn't look like your typical running quarterback and he's not a guy that people think is, you know, quote unquote, good at real football, like he still produces like a rushing quarterback for our fantasy purposes. So, and that, like you said, this, it's so cheap to backstack. And you could go Hodgins, you could go Hyatt, you could go Paris Campbell, Darius Slayton. Like these guys are free, you know?
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that the next highest wide receiver off the board is the aforementioned Jalen Hyatt. He's going at 153 overall. Frankly, and I know you actually got him in this league. I wouldn't say a full on fade of Hyatt because that ADP is so cheap. You want to get a few shares, but I would much rather take Wandale Robinson, the rookie from last year. I guess he's a sophomore now. He's obviously injured. Paris Campbell, when he was actually healthy last year as a Colt, he looked like the Paris Campbell that we thought he could be. Darius Slayton is still super cheap. He's basically free at ADP 200. I mean, shit, of all these players, Paris Campbell's going last and he's got the most experience out of all these guys.
See, I feel like I have a good lean on this one as a Giant fan. I kind of watch this team closely. I think the slot is very crowded right now, and that's kind of why I haven't been taking a lot of Wandale based on his ADP. You have Wandale, you have Paris Campbell. They re-signed Sterling Shepard. They brought in, who was with the Bills, the slot receiver that was at the Bills and the Jets? I'm blanking on his name.
Crowder?
Yes, they brought in Jameson Crowder as well. So that's four guys. I mean, he might not even make the team, but that's four guys kind of fighting for that slot role. Whereas I think Hodgins and Slayton are pretty much locked in on the outside, and Hayek's going to be that kind of the situational deep threat. So I think I like Paris Campbell, who's running ahead. Wandale's working his way back from injury. Mm-hmm. Like, they're both going to have their games, but for me, those guys are more DraftKings picks at full PPR on a full PPR site than on Underdog. But like, Slayton's free in the 18th round. You could get Paris Campbell, absolutely goes undrafted more often than not. And Wandale's going to, he could, they put more draft capital into him than any other receiver. They took him in the 7th round, but he's mm-hmm. coming off an injury and that slot is crowded. So he's not someone I'm getting a lot on Underdog. I'm getting a little more on DraftKings, where he's cheap as well.
Yeah, I think I was just a little soft on, on Jalen Hyatt just throughout the rookie process for all the Dynasty D-gens. And that's a problem. Sometimes you have to kind of take off your rookie lens and see, okay, what's the context of the team that he fell in? But for my Dynasty, I'm not really getting a lot of Jalen Hyatt. He's going a little bit too early for my blood. So I'll probably have to get a few more shares as I do it. But, I mean, listen, at 153 overall, like, you're not going to go wrong. If you pick any of these
that
guys,
reminds me of a quick Dynasty follow up. I wanted to sneak in here after listening to you and Flex mm-hmm. Matt talk on the last podcast. I was surprised as a Seattle fan how down he seemed to be on JSN this year.
Listen,
because I like listening to what fans of a team say, because I think, you know, you follow it closer, like, for better or worse. Maybe it involves some biases, but I do feel like I've hit higher, like, on a higher percentage on my Giants takes than probably any other team, because I know the team inside out.
Yeah, so that's absolutely.
Why. And I obviously there's a lot of competition there for targets with JSN, but, like, I don't know. I think he's a beast. Like, I want to try to lean more on, like, the talent than the situation. I think we're better at predicting talent, like, what's going to translate at the next level than the situation. So,
yeah. So JSN was definitely my wide receiver one in this class. And so right now, so we do have a rookie rankings over at dfsarmy.com. I have Jahmyr Gibbs ranked ahead of JSN simply because I feel like in Dynasty, from a value perspective, you can get more from from Jahmyr Gibbs this year. He's worth more this year. And we definitely have to take a value. You have to take next year or this current year's season more into your value evaluations of these players, in my opinion. So I get where Matt's coming from, but I agree, man. I mean, like, no further than the player like AJ Brown, where situations can change very, very quickly.
Very quickly. Right? And if you listen to what, like, Garrett Wilson and Olave both came right in the league and dominated, and they both say to a man that JSN's better. So,
yeah. Well, there was a controversial trade. So I'm actually in a rookie draft right now with both Flex Matt and our guy Brandon, who's on the show as well.
Yeah.
And they straight up, so this was after the players were drafted, Chris. Get this. I hope you're sitting down. Matt straight up, so he drafted JSN at something like 1.6 or something like that. Jordan Addison fell to like the 1.9, 1.10. They did a straight up player swap. They just traded the picks
for no additional value.
No, it's because Matt's doubling down on his cockamamie take that Jordan Addison is going to be a better player long term than JSN. Which, listen, I love Jordan Addison. He's my number two in this class. I feel like after those two guys, there is a definitive tier break. But straight up, man, I'm taking JSN 10 times out of 10. And hey, man, you gotta put it all in.
I'm only in one Dynasty league. It's Brandon's in it. It's Alan Seslowski's league.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sitting at 6. And so I think the obvious pick is JSN. But here's my little dilemma. It's a super flex, and I have both Herbert and Lamar. So it's like, could I talk myself into Quentin Johnson or Zay? Like, I don't think stacking is as important in a Dynasty league or a home, like a seasonal league, as it is in best ball or DFS. So I'm thinking just going with the talent, JSN. What would you do?
You got to go with the talent. Go with JSN, man. You have to go with JSN. I don't hate Quentin Johnson. Depending on where I was picking, I have him third in that second tier. So behind Zay Flowers. But I would have a really hard time choosing him above a player like JSN. Tyler Lockett, he's a beast, but he's getting older, and he has had injuries in the past. DK Metcalf, same deal, man. Just that big body that he has. He's healthy, but he's not always healthy, right? Takes one little situation, and then JSN's the absolute man. And then come week 8, 9, 10, you're saying, why the hell did I take this player? Now, obviously, the argument for Quentin Johnston is same thing, buried on the depth chart, but two older players, both with past histories of injury. So I get it, but I wouldn't do it, man. Don't overthink it. Go JSN, get sick.
That's the plan. And the only chance I wouldn't is if Gibbs, if the dude drafting at five wanted JSN, then Gibbs fell to me. Then I think I'd just happily take Gibbs. But
yeah, of course. Of course.
Otherwise, JSN.
Yeah, I mean, with quarterbacks like that in a super flex, I mean, you're going to be, even if your depth isn't fantastic, you're going to be competing every single year because of the difference those elite end quarterbacks will make every day. But this isn't, Chris, this isn't a dynasty show. We got to get back to basketball talk, baby.
Let's do it.
We could talk dynasty all day. I love dynasty. It's the beautiful game, I think, when it comes to these DFS or the fantasy football sports. But let's talk a little bit about, you hinted about that week 17 correlation. And I think that is important for our users to understand. And so do you mind, like, just talk about why week 17 is important and why you think correlating different game stacks for week 17, even though, to your point, you have to get through 1-14, week 15 and 16 to even be in the contest. Why are you looking so closely at week 17?
Well, because you just have to look at the payout. Like, these contests are so top heavy. So, like, if you, like, especially on underdog, like the Best Ball Millions or the DraftKings, the you know, their $10 Millie Maker, you're playing over 1,000 teams. So you need to not only get there, you need to go on a run. And then you're kind of treat it like a DFS tournament. You want to be correlated. How often does a completely uncorrelated like DFS lineup take down the Millionaire Maker or take down a large field tournament? But I go with it as a tiebreaker. I think I made some mistakes last year where it could just be, you know, like looking at the results based, but like, one of my biggest stances was Kelsey. Like I thought Mahomes, you could get Mahomes for a good period last summer in the fourth or fifth round. And I thought Kelsey was just a smash relative to all the other tight ends, as proved to be true. So every time I got like a pick in the second half of the first round, I would go Kelsey and then try to get Mahomes fourth or fifth. But I weighed a lot of those teams down with bad Denver runbacks. Like I had a ton of Javonte Williams, which, you know, you could just say I ran bad, but I took anytime it was a choice, let's say Javonte Williams or Nick Chubb, I was going Javonte Williams with this Kelsey teams. Now, is that good process? I'm not totally sure. Like, I think if I have a hard player take that's not the week 17 stack, and I'm going to go with my hard opinion on the player. But if all things are equal, and especially like late in the draft, where we're kind of throwing darts anyway, like, I definitely want that week 17 correlation.
So people need to remember how bullish, not just you, Chris, the entire fantasy industry was on the Denver Broncos last year. Yeah. They were just a quarterback away, man. It was going to be Cortland Sutton season. I remember that. Like there were trade offers where like I had players like Brandon Ayuk, and then talking dynasty here where I'm like, no. I'll sell you Brandon Ayuk. I need to keep Cortland Sutton because Cortland Sutton is going to be a stud this year. He's going to help me win the league this year. And then he absolutely busted. Jerry Jeudy, yes, he had a good second half of the year, but generally speaking, a disappointment, right? You probably weren't even in contention at that stage in your season long leagues. Javonte Williams, listen, it's an injury. You can't predict those, right? So I guess maybe the lesson is just diversification. You do so many drafts, maybe get a few Nick Chubb shares and, yeah, I mean, you can't kick yourself for that, but at least you learn from it. Let's talk about the quarterbacks a little bit, because you did hint that I think now I'm starting to mess up whether this was before the show or just as we were starting, but the quarterbacks are starting to fall in these underdog drafts. And listen, we start drafting early, Chris, and you kind of have to ride the wave sometimes with these ADPs, but to really win these big tournaments, you have to visualize where you think these players are going to be drafted, say, end of August, the closing line ADP versus where they're being currently drafted. And so right now we're starting to see these ADPs of these quarterbacks shift. And I'm curious to see, like, at what point are you comfortable taking some of these elite guys? Because to your point, like, we got Patrick Mahomes going now late round two, and you see Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts falling to early round three.
I'm getting in on Josh Allen and Hurts now.
Yeah.
I'll go, because I remember pretty much the whole draft season, the choice was, are you going to stack those guys with their first round pass catchers? Because it just matched up evenly. Like if you took Kelsey, you would take Mahomes in the second. If you took Diggs, you would take Allen in the second. If you took AJ Brown, you would take, you know, Hurts in the second. But I think the only reason Mahomes isn't falling now is because you have, now that we know week 17, a lot of times the chase, the guy who took Chase will take Mahomes in the second as well. So he's the one that's kind of kept his value. Whereas I would say almost every draft I've done the last week or two, Josh Allen's gone in the mid third. And I have been unlucky to be able to pair Diggs with him. Most of the time someone will snipe me right before, but I've seen a lot of people do it. Like a lot of people are getting that third round Josh Allen paired with Diggs. And then I think that's just, why not? Like at that point, like it even saves you a roster spot because then you don't have to draft a third quarterback. That's one more dart throw you could take late at a running back or wide receiver. And same with Hurts. Like that here's a cool thing that I've done a couple times. If let's say you get drafting from like the four spot or the you know the three spot, you got like McCaffrey or Tyreek Hill or someone like that, Cooper Kupp, then you take Devontae Smith late second. No one on that turn is going to want to take an unstacked Hurts generally. So you could almost always, I've done it probably three or four times in the last week, get Hurts in the early third if you have an early third round pick. So then you've got one stud, whether it's McCaffrey or Hill or Kupp, and then you've got the Devontae Smith Hurts stack. And then you could maybe jump, you might have to jump a couple picks of ADP, but just you're going to get Goddard too if you want. It's not hard to make that double stack at all. So that's one of my favorite things to do right now.
So you'll almost like play like a little bit of game theory here. You'll say,
I dare you to take an unstacked Hurts.
Yeah.
And most people won't do it. Like a lot of people do that too with Burrow because it especially works well with the quarterbacks that don't run. So like no one wants an unstacked Burrow that knows what they're doing. No one wants an unstacked Tua. So if you take Chase and Higgins and you go Chase Higgins, you could push Burrow back to I see him go to the fifth round sometimes. Like I've done it and then taken him in the fourth and then at like late fourth. And then I'll judge basically, is there someone I want really bad with that late fourth round pick that I'll risk someone might snipe me on Burrow on the 4-5 turn there. But if it's someone that I don't love, I'll just lock up Burrow there late fourth, basically at ADP or a little worse, or I'll push it to the fifth. And I've gotten some fifth round Burrow. So you could do it with Tua and Waddle as well. Like those guys will fall, the non-running QBs, people don't want them unstacked. So you could kind of force the board a little bit.
Yeah. So right now Joe Burrow is going at pick 46, which is just the back end of the fourth. So you could if you ended up like legitimately, if you go Ja'Marr Chase at pick 3 and then you go and you choose, say T Higgins, even around 2, a little ahead of his ADP. And then you come back in round 4, like that's a very legitimate stack. That's sharp, man.
Yeah. I've been doing that. The tough thing with that is how do you run back KC? Cause that KC's tricky this year. Like you could have, is Hopkins going to go there? That seems to be like the Adam Schefter rumor that it could be a destination. And I think,
who knows?
I loved Kadarius Toney as a talent, but I think he's being massively overdrafted where he is. Like what is he, like a sixth or seventh round pick right now?
Kadarius Toney right now, I'm glad you asked because I will look right now. He's going to pick 72 overall.
Okay.
So yeah, that's right at the 6-7 turn.
I don't think he's going to finish in that like area value wise. He's either going to well exceed that and be a guy we're taking in the third or fourth round next year, or he's just going to have the normal hamstring flare ups and like be a guy that should be going in the 13th round. Like that's just, that's a dice roll. You're just blowing the dice with Kadarius Toney. But there's other guys around there that I think are a lot safer bets. Like, I guess it just depends on how you want to draft. Like I'm fine.
Yeah. Well, who would you rather take? Would you rather take Treylon Burks, who's going right before him, or Kadarius?
I would, like in a vacuum, Treylon Burks every time. Like I think
George
Burks,
Pickens
every time.
Pickens?
But the only place time I'm taking Treylon Burks there is with the Mahomes or as a run back to Cincinnati. Like I'll be underweight on Toney. Like I'll take him with Mahomes or in a Cincinnati run back. But other than that, just Burks and Pickens all day. I think those guys are, I think they give you the same upside with a lot safer floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think, just going back to where DeAndre Hopkins could fall, obviously he mentioned the Bills, obviously he mentioned the Kansas City Chiefs. Both those teams don't have a ton of cap space. Now I get you can get creative, but I believe it's tomorrow on Sunday he's scheduled to go meet, this is Hopkins, meet the Titans. He's also
Titans,
now
yeah.
scheduled to go talk to the Patriots. So, I mean, we talked like, yes, it'd be fantastic to go to all these potential championship caliber teams, but can they afford them? And will
He's
he
gonna
have a
want the
real?
money.
Yeah, he
I
wants
think
the
his
money. Why
decision's
not?
gonna come down to money. And he's getting late in his career. I think he's gonna want a last big check. So we'll
Yeah,
see
it
whoever
makes
can give
sense.
him the. I mean, I obviously I don't know. I'm speculating, but that would be my guess.
It's so tough to know what's going on in these guys' head, man. Like he's from a from an individual player perspective, I feel like he's got nothing else to prove, right, in terms of his career. And really, what is he lacking? It's a championship. So it's not my money, I suppose, right? But to say if he makes say 10, 11 million bucks, and I guess like he looks across over at Baltimore, says, what the hell? Like you guys just paid Odell
Yeah,
Beckham. This is
Odell's
insane.
contract is screwing up everything in the receiver market. It's kind of
Pretty
wild that
much.
he got $15 million. In our draft, we did that poodle draft. That was like the one pick. I never take Odell. I think Odell is like overpriced, but I missed on Zay. I missed on Bateman. So I was like, I wanted some piece of the Lamar stack. And I hate the receivers in that range. I've heard other people say this too, but I think there's a wide receiver dead zone like this year. Like I think everything like after like Bateman and like Elijah Moore there, like all the way down to like Hyatt and like Mingo, like the kind of hopeful upside rookies, there's so much like crap in there that I don't want to deal with. Like the Juju's, like Odell. Like I hate that like round like 8 through like 11 or 12 for receivers. Like I just every time I get there, I'm like, there's not a single receiver on the board I like.
Yeah, so I have my players tiered here, and I have like a tier 10 here, and that includes players like Rashad Bateman, Brandon Cooks. I've got the rookie Zay Flowers, Quentin Johnson. I've even got Courtland
Yeah.
Sutton in there. But after that, to your point, like Jameson Williams,
There's
who I've got him in as like the top guy in tier 11. But there's Jameson Williams, Juju, very little upside. Elijah Moore. I mean, if Hop goes there, he's
Then,
eviscerated.
yeah,
Odell
exactly.
Beckham. Yeah, that's kind of a nasty tier. And that's, I mean, that's it right at 94, right? So it's that's an interesting part of the draft because that's when you can start taking a bit of a shot on some of these running backs,
The
like
running
Levon
backs.
Achane's there, Rashad Penny's in that range, Samaje Perine's in that range. So that's definitely an area where you can pivot, especially if you go let's call it hero RB and you
Yeah.
really want to build up that RB depth. That's definitely a sweet spot. Let's speaking of kind of this later rounds, looking at your exposures. When I look at your high exposed players, it just makes sense. It's these guys typically going in later rounds. But let's talk about your quarterback exposure because the guy right at the top of those lists, we've already talked about one of the guys. We got Daniel Jones, who's your second most owned man, or I don't want to say owned, but second most rostered
Yep.
quarterback and 19% of your drafts. But Anthony Richardson, the phenom himself, the Indianapolis Colts rookie quarterback. You've got Anthony Richardson. He's your highest exposed quarterback at 23% of your drafts. Why are you going so hard on Anthony Richardson?
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. It's just it's
Boom.
the rushing upside. Like we've seen like what someone like I could see him having the kind of season that Fields had last year, where he's not really getting you that much as a passer, but he's an absolute, like, as we know, the greatest athletic testing quarterback ever. All the reports coming out of camp have been sterling. And I like that Shane Steichen, that's his name, I believe, right? The new coach there, who was the offensive coordinator in Philly, knows how to tailor that offense around like a Jalen Hurts type. Now, will he put in the like Hurts is known to have like the best work ethic, just being like the smartest, hardest working, like highest character guy, like QB type in the league, and was willing and improved greatly because of that. But I think we don't know if that is Richardson. Everybody seems to love the kid, but I think they have a great offensive line there. They have talent around him. I think he's gonna have like a very, I think he gives you upside at that point in the draft that not any other quarterbacks really do. So, like, if you miss out on like the high-end quarterbacks, he's my favorite default option to be like, who is gonna outdo these guys in week 17? Who could possibly put up a score that beats Mahomes, that beats Allen, that beats Hurts, or at least is close enough relative to where you drafted him, that you have a chance at taking down a big tournament. So he's a guy that I'm getting overweight there.
Well, and to your point about the tournament play, I mean, typically we see an arc for the first season with these rookies, right? And guess what? Week 17, assuming he stays healthy, like that's where hopefully he's going to be hitting a stride. And the thing that I like is that the Colts, listen, I would say the Colts underperformed last year, right? Going into last year, obviously they had a lot of injuries they had to deal with. Matt Ryan he's not on the team right now for a reason. They underperformed, but I think the team itself is better than they would expect. Hopefully their offensive line can actually stay healthy. But I mean, Michael Pittman is going to be solid. He's got Alec Pierce, who was a rookie from last year. So he's a sophomore this year. They went and they got Josh Downs, who was one of my favorite rookies. It's just an absolute jitterbug out there. And there's a real opportunity here when you look at just even past years, like who are these guys going right in our range past years? Justin Fields a few years ago or last year, Lamar Jackson a few years ago. That's how you, if you hit on those late, call it right around eight, nine, 10, those quarterbacks, those are the guys that can really differentiate the league, because any given week, Anthony Richardson could score as much as a Patrick Mahomes, as a Jalen Hurts in a given week with that rushing upside. Absolutely love that. Of course, we already talked about Daniel Jones and just his upside. I feel like that's a sweet spot as well. Massive upside, a player that could put up 35 points in a week. That's a Daniel Jones.
We've seen him do it. He did it in week 17 last year. And with the Indy guys, they play the Raiders indoor week 17. Like, I think the Raiders are going to be a dumpster fire this year. Like, they've already got if Jimmy's ankle that they apparently had to unguarantee his contract or whatever for, if that doesn't hold up, they're looking at Brian Hoyer and like the rookie from Purdue, like what's his name, like like that team is not. And I don't think they're I think their head coach is a disaster. I think that franchise just is a mess. And so like if that could be an opportunity where I could see Indy being like kind of on the verge of the playoff hunt and just like really showing out in a dome against the Raiders week 17. I mean, that's obviously speculative, like we're making assumptions, but you know, these are the little tiebreaker things I'm using when I'm trying to draft a team that has a chance to win a tournament, which is, and another thing, JT, like why is JT going in the mid to late second round now? Like, I'm getting a ton of him lately. Yeah. Like, we've seen him be the best player in fantasy football not that long ago. And I'm willing to kind of throw last season out because, like, as you described, they had, like, Jeff Saturday walk in off the ESPN set with no coaching experience. That they were a mess. Like, if they just have a competent program this year, I think that's a team that could exceed their expectations. So I'm buying a lot of Indy.
I think one of the reasons that managers are hesitant to draft him in round one is because, one, I mean, he had the injury last year, so he's coming off an injured season. But also just the fact that historically JT wasn't really known for his pass-catching ability. And now with a run-first rookie quarterback like Anthony Richardson, he's likely going to tuck the ball and run versus pass it off to JT. Yeah. So I could see that, right? Maybe people don't think that he's got that.
I think that's the reasoning behind it. And they think that Richard Skitson's going to steal some touchdowns, which he will. But I still think just JT is efficient enough behind that line that he's going to more than justify his second round price. Like, I think we're going to be looking back at this like midway through the season and be like, wow, how did I get this guy? Like, I got him at pick 20 in a draft the other day. Like, that seems like, and his ADP is 16. So it's not like that's even that big of a fall. Like, we're going to be looking at it like, why was he going so late?
There's one word for that, Chris. That's cockamamie. It's cockamamie.
I'm with you.
Really,
bro.
Really interesting. So, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and one of my must listens to is always the JJ Zacharyson podcast.
Yeah,
and he recently really talked about just the difference between like ranking these players and where they perform when you look at, say, like a 0.5 PPR versus a full PPR, right?
Yeah.
And obviously Underdog is a half PPR, whereas DraftKings is full. And people forget that. Like, it's a half point PPR. There's more emphasis on scoring touchdowns. And when you know, close your eyes, picture at the end of the season, there's maybe a handful of players that are going to get 20 total touchdowns. Not Jameson, or not Mr. Williams, obviously, from Detroit last year. But like, Jonathan Taylor is definitely in that conversation as a player with at the end of the season. Yeah, of course JT is going to get 20 touchdowns. He's Jonathan freaking Taylor, right?
Look what Miles Sanders did in this offense last year with Steichen at calling the plays. Like, Miles Sanders is no JT. So
no,
I love him in the second round. I'm going to have a ton of second round JT.
Yeah, I think that's really sharp. And then just to put a bow on your quarterbacks here, your third most rostered is Justin Fields. So Chris, I think you got to type.
That's the DFS Army thing. Like, we attack running quarterbacks. Like, I feel like the geek has that like tattooed across his chest or something like that. We've been preaching that for years and it's worked. So why go away from it?
Especially in, listen, I mean, they have safe floors and massive ceilings, obviously, but especially in tournament plays where you want those spike weeks where you can get like literally a 35 to a 40 point game into your quarterback, like that's going to help you advance. And a key difference between these tournament plays versus, say, like just a standard 12 person underdog draft where that's not a tournament, is that in those styles, every single week is equal. Right. So if you're going to go and get one of those more conservative quarterbacks, like, I don't know, say you decide to wait on Kirk Cousins, that's pretty consistent every single week, because every single week that matters. But to win these tournaments, you need spike week potential. And really, I mean, how often do you see quarterbacks throw for 5 touchdowns? It's not very often, right? It's more likely
a quarterback's going to
throw. No, it's more likely he's going to throw for 1, rush for 2, and get in another like 1200 or 120 yards on the ground. Like, that's how you're going to win these tournaments. So I like that. Let's move on to some of the other positions here, Chris. Let's talk about the running back position. So you went, looks like you've got a lot of exposure to these rookies, and it's hard to tell. I mean, I guess this would all be post draft, but you've got Chase Brown. And again, all these guys are relatively cheap. So you've got a fair amount of exposure to Chase Brown. Then you've got Devon Achane. And then your third is Zach Charbonnet. So let's talk about Chase Brown to start.
Well, he's a guy that I've liked in the pre-draft process a lot. Like, he was super productive at Illinois, and then he crushed the combine. Like, he tested phenomenally. And I just read an article. I wish I could quote who wrote it, but I read an article basically describing him as like the running back version of Jalen Hurts, of like just a dude who gets it, like first guy in the building, last guy to leave. Like, keeps a notebook, like, written up what he wants to accomplish at the next day's practice every day. Like, they are super impressed with this kid's makeup. And if he has the production, he has the testing. I know he doesn't have the draft capital, but and plus, I'm not a mixing guy. Like, I know a lot of smart people are. So I think there's an opportunity, and I'm definitely not a Travion Williams guy. I think there's an opportunity for him to climb the depth chart. So, like, I like taking stances in, like, you know, in the 16th round. Like, if I get 30% Chase Brown and he busts, like, that's not sinking my team. It's like, that's not going to ruin my season. So, like, as my fifth or sixth running back. So I that's a guy that I just believe in the talent. I believe in the offense. So I'm just going to take a stance there, like, on him particularly.
Let's talk about Chase Brown a little bit. So he's a little bit older. He's 23 years old.
Yeah,
he did the extra year because of the COVID year. He's a Canadian boy. I don't know if you knew that. So
I did not know that. There you go,
Chase Brown. If you ever have a chance, like, listen to an interview. Sharp, sharp kid. I heard him get interviewed a few times during the Senior Bowl week. Super sharp kid. Just somebody you really want to cheer for. To your point, he got, I would say, later round capital at 5.28. Today's NFL, it's really like the round 5 is really around 4 nowadays, right?
Yeah, it is totally.
What I like, though, is that when you look at just his size, so he's 5'10", 209 pounds, the kid has 10-inch hands, man. Like, those are just banana hands, which is amazing. Yeah. His college target share was 8.2%, which is pretty solid, and his college yards per carry was 5 yards per carry. One of the issues was he was noted as being a weak pass blocker, but pretty much every rookie running back, with very rare exceptions, they always need to work on their pass blocking, because in college you're not asked to do that. Right. No. So it's a skill that they're going to need to work on, which is fine. But I would say if they're going to be using him, especially in like the passing game and third downs, that was one of the reasons they always, like, people would be screaming, like, why is Samaje Perine on the field right now on third down when it's an important first down you need to get, like, in the Super Bowl? Because guess what? He's a way better pass blocker.
Yeah. So Harley Mixon sucks at pass blocking.
But. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's one thing he definitely needs to work on if he wants to be able to get playing time. But again, with the upside, I don't expect, listen, I'm not a lawyer, but if there is going to be a suspension, I wouldn't expect it this year for Joe Mixon. We've seen how the whole Alvin Kamara thing is playing out. Dude's still not suspended. They still
have. That's weird. I don't know what to make of that situation. Like, I haven't been taking him. Just I trend against the older guys anyway when I draft. Yeah. So I haven't been taking much Kamara at all, but who knows? Like, that's one of those things where it's like, I'm assuming there's going to be a 4-6 game suspension, but that's just a guess. We're all just guessing at this point.
I have a question for you, Chris. If you were at a work event, because that's what he was at, at a work event, got into a fight on camera, kicking a guy when he's down, and then there's pictures afterwards of this guy just the crap eating out of him. Like, to me, that's, I don't care what the legal process is. There's a smoking gun over here. Like, there needs to be discipline.
Probably will be. Yeah.
It's shocking. But then the Joe Mixon thing's a lot more murky.
It is. I don't think there's the smoking gun like you referred to in that.
No. So I would say it's a safe bet for Joe Mixon. But then again, he's also been injured, right? And you want to get pieces of this offense because, to your point, if Joe goes down, it's going to be wide open. Joe Mixon, that is. It's going to be wide open to see who's going to step up. And Chase Brown certainly has that opportunity. Now, the other player I want to talk to you about is Devon Achane. Because he's your second most rostered player. And it's kind of funny. We were joking that Devon Achane, of course, was drafted by Miami, pretty much the nut spot for the draft in terms of a smaller player. But I mean, ironically or coincidentally, your one player, Alexander Mattison, who you got in this tournament, he's going to be buoyed by Dalvin Cook leaving. But there's a lot of talk about Dalvin going to Miami. He's from Miami. And how would that worry you about Devon Achane? Or do you feel like that doesn't really change the narrative? Based on what the projected role is.
It changes it a little bit, but I don't think it changes it as much as people might assume. Because I think Devon Achane, you're not betting on him due to volume. He's like world-class track runner and who I think Mike McDaniel will be able to get in space and pop some big plays with. So I'm only counting on him for like 10 touches a game. And I think he's going to have some, better in best ball, like spike week games where he busts those 50 yard runs. He busts those 50 yard screens. I think what Cook will basically cut into the Jeff Wilson and the Raheem Mostert role, I think more. Yeah. I think he kind of kills those guys a lot more than he kills Achane. Like, obviously as an Achane owner, I don't want Dalvin Cook going there. But I also think it might create a bit of a buying opportunity. So I think Achane will drop 3 or 4 rounds, put signs there, and then I'll still get shares on the cheap, just knowing that he can pop off the big play at any point.
And yeah, I mean, so the issue with Devon Achane, for those who aren't as familiar with the rookie class, he's a little bit smaller. He's 5'9", 188 pounds. And historically, when you have these running backs under 200 pounds, that's kind of that Mendoza line. We really like closer to like 210, 215 minimum.
Yeah.
But Devon Achane, I mean, in that Mike McDaniel offense, it's like, to me, that's a really good fit. College target share, 14.7%. The guy knows how to catch the ball. So absolutely explosive. I agree with you there. Speeding up a little bit just because we still got a lot to talk about. The last guy I do want to mention, though, your highest look at that. JT's 21% managed there. But the guy just above him is Aaron Jones. Are you a little bit worried about that Green Bay offense? Or to your point earlier, you think that Jordan Love's going to be at least good enough to manage it and Aaron Jones is still going to maintain some value?
Yeah, that's basically the way I'm looking at it. Like, and I've taken a lot of Aaron Jones when I have like a Minnesota guy. When I have Justin, he pairs nicely as like, I want to do the run back with Justin Fields there when I do, Justin Fields, with Jefferson, when I do get the one overall pick. And I just think, we've seen what Jones can do, and I don't think he's washed yet. And I think that they're going to concentrate more on the run now with Rodgers out of there. That's what their head coach has always wanted, to be a run first guy. And I think he's got too much. He's too good of a player for where he's going. Like, I think last year we saw this a lot with like Sanders and Josh Jacobs, guys that we knew were good football players that nobody wanted to draft because they were veterans. They weren't sexy. They were in perceived bad roles. And then they vastly outperformed that. Like, if I'm getting fifth round Aaron Jones, like, I know Aaron Jones is a good football player. And like, what we don't know for sure is how this new offense is going to look under Love. So I think we're getting a bit of a discount there. Like, I don't think he's going to sink my team. And we've seen him have the capability to bust off those 3 touchdown games on occasion, like that really elevate you. If they come at the right time, like as a fifth round pick, I like Aaron Jones this year.
Yeah. So Aaron Jones last year, he finished as the RB12 in terms of points per or fantasy points per week. The thing that kind of stands out to me, when I look at goal line, rush opportunities. He had one. He had one goal line carry last year, which when you look at all the players around him. Yeah. So there's that massive just like slate breaking week upside is maybe a little bit limited there. But Aaron Jones, he took a bit of a pay cut to stay in town. Obviously, he knew Aaron Rodgers was going to be there, right? The writing was on the wall at that stage when he made that shift. And I think I agree with you. I think he's a great value there. Let's move on quickly to the wide receiver position. Now, one of the players we talked about, I already said I'm not too high on him, but you seem to like him. Jalin Hyatt, you've got a 42%. Again, that price at right around 150 ADP is super cheap. You also have Josh Downs. Now, that one's interesting to me. Talk to me about Josh Downs. What do you like about him?
He's dirt cheap, and he's easy to backstack. Like, because obviously, like you said, my number one quarterback was AR. So, like, I'm getting those cheap stacks. That's him and Hyatt are guys that I'm just stacking with the quarterbacks I take. Like, and because they're free. Like in the, you know, I think Hyatt's like kind of 13th round. Richardson's maybe like 15th, 16th. I mean, not Richardson, Downs. So, like, if I want to double stack those guys where I can cheap. So, like, I'm not. I mean, I like those guys as players. Like you were talking about how you like Downs in the pre-draft process, and Hyatt won the Biletnikoff Award. I know it was in a bit of a gimmicky offense, but I trust Brian Daboll, especially late in the season, to find a way to make use of his down the field talent. So, like, I'm getting those guys dirt cheap, and they work in my stack. So that's really why I'm high on that.
So I just, like, we're so into this fantasy football space, Chris. Be it Dynasty, be it DFS, like we've been doing DFS, we've been doing best balls literally since February. It's a sickness, it really is. But for those of you who are still just like you're starting to jump into it, it's still only June, it's still very, very early in the fantasy football calendar. Just go to YouTube, just Google Josh Down highlights. Like, just if you want to just get sick, just watch this guy play. The man, he's a little bit smaller, which is why I think he fell in the draft. Looking back, he has that upside to be the best wide receiver in his class. He legitimately does. I like the fact that you're pairing him with Anthony Richardson. The thing that worries me a little bit is that one of the things that Anthony Richardson did struggle with in college was just those short to intermediate passes.
Sure, yeah.
He was a beast at the deep ball. But I think that that's something that they're continuing to work on right now in OTAs. So I think that's, for the price, it's super, super cheap. And then you got Jonathan Mingo. Now, I'm a little cold on Jonathan Mingo. I'm just, in general, through the process, I feel like he was elevated just because of where he went to college at Ole Miss. He obviously was drafted by Carolina to be paired up with Bryce. And you do have a fair amount of exposure with Bryce. You got 16% exposure with Bryce, 25% Mingo. So it kind of makes sense. Tell me about that.
I just think that those are the same thing. It's like value where they're going. Like, Bryce goes super late. And so, like, he's a guy that I think pairs nicely with like the elite quarterback. So on builds where I have Hurts or I have Josh Allen or, you know, Fields or Lamar or somebody like that, just pair him with like a super late Bryce is someone who I think he's not going to, like, you know, he's not going to put up massive numbers, I don't think, as a rookie, but he's going to be a guy that's going to give you a competent score each week and fill in nicely as a cheap QB2 with an elite option. So that's why I've been taking him there. And I think Mingo is probably, might be a tad overpriced, but I think I'm looking for guys that could potentially break out in that range.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather try, like, take a chance with Mingo and be wrong than just like go with the dusty veteran, like Odell or, you know, whoever, someone that we've seen fail before. Like maybe I'm wrong with Mingo. And like, I don't have a super strong like player take on him, but it's just more of just where he's going and using him in stacks. Like, and plus I like him when I try to run it back with any Jacksonville guys too, because that's the week 17 matchup there. So if you got like a Ridley Lawrence stack, like, throw Mingo in there and hope that he's the guy that gets it late.
Well, just looking at a lot of these players, you've got a lot of rookies, and it's a safe bet to make because typically, just say the first half of the season, they might not be impactful, right? So that's when you're going to really, your teams are going to hopefully, they're going to lean on these more experienced players. But come the second half of the season, that's where the rookies will typically take a bit of the ones that are going to break out are often going to break out in the second half of the season. So banking on these players to have big weeks in these important work weeks to advance into the tournament and obviously week 17, I think is huge. So I can't fault you for that. Fair amount of exposure to JSN as well. You got 21% exposure. Love that. I'll be honest, I'm a little soft on him versus where he's going in ADP. He's going right around 60. I've got him baked right around 70. But that is to say, I actually have a fair amount of exposure to him just because early on, I wanted to get as much GSN as I could because the talent is just, you can't deny it.
Yeah, and the reports have been like glowing out of camp and JSN.
Just like, oh my God.
I know you got to take everything that comes out this year with the great, like this time of year with the grain of salt, but like they love what they're seeing out of JSN right now. So
he's a stud, man. He is the real deal. He needs to stay healthy. He missed most of the last season because of an injury, most of the last college season because of injury, but the kid is a stud. Let's touch quickly on your tight ends. Similar story here, people. Tell me if you heard this one before. Rookie Michael Mayer, rookie Sam Laporta, rookie Dalton Kincaid, Trey McBride, cheap Chika Kwankwo. Seems like you are a bit of a trash man when it comes to
these. Oh yeah, this I'm punting off tight end for the most part this year. Like it's tough to do the Kelce Mahomes thing is so expensive right now. That's your first 2 round picks, and then like it's almost where they're going, the pockets they're going. It's very hard to stack Andrews and Lamar without like jumping and giving up a lot of ADP. So like once you get past those first few guys, Hawk is expensive. Like he goes a round or two ahead of Pitts and Goddard, who I think are decent values. I don't mind getting, but after that, and like we talked about Waller, but once you get past those guys, it's like, I just like to fire out like these late darts and just like hope to hit something. Like, yeah, I think you could hit it with volume. I'm taking a lot of three tight end builds. I like the rookies. I think Laporta's in a great spot.
Yes.
I love Chiga Conquo. Like he had, I think what it was, his yards per route run was, I think, better than everybody, any tight end in the league aside from Kelce last year. Yeah. I know he didn't run a ton of routes, but he's a guy that I think has upside talent relative to where he's going. People like, and I think Mayer, it's weird because this was a guy that was like, you know, quoted like the baby Gronk, like was so hyped up coming out of college, and then fell a little bit in the draft because he didn't test like off the charts. And a lot of times the best tight ends don't. Like if you look like historically, like Kelce didn't test crazy, you know, like Zach Ertz was a great fantasy tight end for years. He didn't test crazy. Witten's going to the Hall of Fame. He runs like your dad, like pushing the mower. But like, I think, and I've also got a lot of Michael Mayer because as kind of the week 17 correlation to all those indie guys I'm drafting.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's a dirt cheap way to have like a run back there at a position that I think is soft, just like, you know, and I think he's going to play, like he's going to be the starting tight end from the jump. Like Jimmy G, you know, he's been known to pepper the tight end if you look at the way he went to Kittle. So I think he's going too late. He's a guy that I really like.
Yeah, I think the narrative with Michael Mayer is that when you look at this tight end class, he might be the best all around tight end, including blocking. And I mean, unless you're like a George Kittle or the aforementioned Rob Gronkowski, where you're super hyper efficient, but you can still do the inline blocking. Like that's the kind of player Michael Mayer is going to have to be to really, I think, move the needle from a tight end perspective. But again, when you're taking a shotgun approach, you're just getting a lot of these guys late. I've heard listening to a few other shows that studied past success. There's been teams that have been successful with the four tight end build. Literally, like some of your like the double digit rounds.
I've heard some really sharp guys talk about that.
Yeah,
four tight ends seems like a lot in underdog, especially like when with 18, with only 18 rounds. If you want to do that in DraftKings and the thought behind it is that like these guys like Luke Musgrave, who you can get in like the 18th round, you know he's going to have a role. You know he's going to be on the team. It's not a dead roster spot. Like if you're drafting, you know, Justin Ross like in the 18th round, maybe you believe, like I've taken a few stabs at it, but like I'd say there's probably a 75% chance he gets you a zero, doesn't score a point for you the whole season. So when you're taking like these, the late round receivers and running backs are way more speculative than the tight ends, but four of them just seems tough to me. Like I could get it on DraftKings. I can't get there on underdog though. I think I three tight end builds I do a lot of, like, mm-hmm. Give me the rookies. Give me a Conquo. I don't mind Matt like mixing in a Hayden Hurst type, like who you know is going to be out there every snap. Conklin, like we've seen what Rodgers pepper tight ends. I don't mind Conklin. There's so many late guys that I think you can mix and match based on your stacks, based on what you've already done. So I'm punting off tight end for the most part this year.
If you don't get an early one, just wait, baby. Hands in the air and just let it ride. Listen, we've been talking about it all show, Chris. Let's just talk to the people before we head out here. We'll finish this off with this last segment here. We've talked a lot about week 17 stacking. Let's talk about some of these game stacks that I like. I'm going to name a few. And then if I missed any, you let me know. So one of the ones that stands out to me as a sexy game stack is the Lions are playing the Cowboys. That's one. Lots of fireworks potentially there. You got your Dolphins versus your Ravens. Again, Lamar, just please stay healthy, Lamar, so that this game can be an absolute shootout. I guess same can be said about Tua Tagovailoa. You mentioned the Falcons and the Bears, especially if you've got a Justin Fields. That's fantastic. You get a little Bijan. You get a little Justin Fields. Just a rushing bonanza. You talked about the Raiders and the Colts. I think that's more so just because that could be such a dumpster fire from a Las Vegas side that the Colts can put up a lot of points. Of course, the narrative that Anthony Richardson is going to be in fine form at that stage of the season. Another one you mentioned, Eagles, Cardinals, similar thing. You think potentially the Eagles are just going to be able to steamroll the Arizona Cardinals, but you want to get a little bit of Cardinal exposure coming back. And finally on my list I have here, now this is probably going to be one of the marquee games because it's going to be impactful. It's going to be the Bengals at the Chiefs.
I think you hit on most of my favorites there. Cowboys, Detroit, where you started off, you know, it's indoors and there's a lot of like late options. I think those are two sneaky late tight ends. Like Ferguson is a tight end that could step up into that space vacated by Schultz. And I love Laporta. I know there's a lot of dynasty heads out there who have their eye, who have had their eye on him, but he crushed at Iowa. He was awesome. And then, he went to the combine and blew everybody away. Like, and he is just very smooth. Like, you watch the way he gets in and out of routes. Like, and Iowa is a tight end factory. He's another one that's, you know, the camp hype is just completely over the moon on. Yeah. But you could still get him late. Like, he's going to be out there, I think, starting from day one. I forget who gave the stat. I listened, like you, I listened to so many podcasts. Yeah. But, like, Detroit as a team had one of the, I think maybe the second most tight end touchdowns last year. And that was with trading Hockenson. They had like the fluke three tight end game touchdown game out of like Brock Wright or like these random dudes. But like, I think Laporta is going to come right in there, especially with J-Mo out for the first 6 weeks and get really established as a part of that offense. So I love him as like a late part of a Detroit Dallas week 17 stack. And you could, it's very easy to stack that game because you can get, if you get the 12-13, you could just go CeeDee Amon-Ra to start. And then both quarterbacks go dirt cheap. I think Pollard is a value in the second round. Like that's such an easily stackable game. I love that one. And obviously Kansas City, since he's has a point, it's probably be the highest total on the board, but like, that's tough with where all those guys go. Like it's like, you can't stack Kelce and Chase. Like, that's impossible. No one,
it's tough. You know? That's impossible. That's
but impossible. It's tough. But there's ways to try to get cute with that. We've talked about, like, you know, I have a hard time with the KC receivers. Like, is Sky Moore gonna be worth something? Is Rashee Rice? Is Hopkins gonna wind up there? Justin Ross is getting hype. Is like an 18th round flyer. I like Chase Brown. Some people, I think Irv Smith is kind of a sneaky tight end. So there's a lot of ways to get exposure to that game that doesn't have to be like the full out, like expensive, use your first four round picks to try to stack it. So
it's exciting. And listen, these are the types of things you really need to just take shots on, right? If you're going to, especially if you're going to be volume drafting, get exposure to these different parts of games, because the fantasy gamers are getting a lot smarter, a lot sharper. And these are the things that they look at, right? The quote, sharps. I would consider you a sharp, Chris, because you're a degen like that. And that's why I want to have you on the show. So, of course, thank you so much, Chris. If you guys want to hit him up on Twitter, at Chris Felicetta, the link or the spelling is in the show description below. Loves talking fantasy football, loves just talking fun takes, and he's part of the Underdog Cardio Club, so you see some of his draft boards almost regularly. So you see the
I'm out there running through Central Park. I post them every day. It's kind of, I think you're running out of time to get in the Underdog Cardio Club. There's maybe like a week left to get the drafts in, but like, it's amazing. You get $3 back on every one of your Best Ball Mania contests rake back. So you get a little bit in shape. I burned a lot of calories running around while drafting.
That's what I was gonna say. Listen, you can pair your vices with exercise. I would say that's perfect, Chris. So yeah. Go check it out. Of course, you guys should go out, check out dfsarmy.com. We obviously talk everything fantasy football on this channel, but over at our parent station, DFS Army on YouTube, they talk all about the DFS contests. If you subscribe to the podcast feed, there has been Major League Baseball strategy dropping almost every single day. So there's a ton of content out there, a lot of free content, but of course, where the money's at, Chris, is for our VIP members. That's where you get access to the Discord. You get myself. You can jump in, you can shout out Chris if you want some best ball advice. We're always talking fantasy football. We're always talking DFS contests. And guess what, Chris?
The pick'em plays on Underdog have been killing it in the Discord too. The Underdog pick'em plays.
Lynn with coaches does. Winning, like one of our coaches took down a $50,000 tournament the other day. Like, we have real members cashing real money every single day. What are you waiting for? DFSArmy.com. DFSArmy.com. I'm Flex Shane, of course. My guy, Chris Felicetta, thanks for jumping on the show. We are the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. Be safe out there, people. Sheesh. Yeah, big time. Knowing that. Diamonds in my teeth. I got a lot of shine.